You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, number 136.
Hi, this is Rod Murray. Glad to be back. That was a clip from the well-known set of violin concertos called The Four Seasons by Vivaldi. Since we're well into autumn, I thought I'd play the Allegro movement from Concerto No. 3 in F major, also known as the Autumn Concerto. It's performed by the American Baroque Orchestra and will be played in full at the end of my podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. I also invite you to follow me on Twitter. My handle is RodsPods. As always, I post links to all of the things we talk about on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com. My main topic today is ApprendNet. Now, if you don't know about ApprendNet, I think you might be in for a treat. I had the privilege of interviewing Paul Friedman, who's the CEO of ApprendNet Incorporated. ApprendNet is a video learning platform. It allows us to turn passive videos into active learning. We talk about how it's so important in learning skills to practice, practice, and practice, and to get feedback, especially from your peers, and the mentoring that you supply as the instructor. We talk about that and much more. And I also want to draw your attention to the fact that I did a presentation on ApprendNet at a recent meeting of the Northeast eLearning Consortium. It was a case study on learning hands-on skills using ApprendNet here at the University of the Sciences. I have a link to my slide deck on my show notes. Also, in the interest of full disclosure, I'm not paid by ApprendNet, and I don't have stock in the company, but I am a very enthusiastic supporter. Anybody that knows me knows that we like ApprendNet here at University of the Sciences. It's used quite a bit in our occupational therapy and physical therapy departments. So without further ado, here's my interview with Paul Friedman.
Paul, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to me today and to my listeners. I really appreciate your time. I've been a big fan of ApprendNet, as my audience knows, for a number of years now. Can you tell me a little bit about your background and how you came to be connected to ApprendNet?
Certainly, and thank you very much for having me. The long form of my background starts with sort of a family higher education background. So my father was a physics professor, my mother ran research administration's offices, and I sort of grew up on college campuses. I didn't end up going down the academia route, as quite honestly my parents probably would have preferred, but I didn't sort of stay very far away from the family business, as it were. So when I was in college, I started a company that now they would call an ed tech company. It was a product that admissions offices used to help with student service. In sort of 2004, I sold that to a company called Hobson's and worked with them on their technology group, and then did a company afterwards that was involved in very early platform for competency-based learning. So you know, my entire career has been spent in the intersection of technology and education, and that's because I have a great passion for that activity. There's a lot of talk in Silicon Valley about virality, but in my experience, there's nothing more viral than a college education, than a high quality education. As soon as somebody in their family goes to college, their nieces, their nephews, even their younger siblings are more likely to go to school, and you combine that with the fact that an education past the high school level is really a prerequisite to be a fully functioning member of a knowledge economy, then I believe there's no more important work, full stop, than, trying to increase efficacy, expand access, and lower costs of higher education. And that's what, technology is supposed to do. And so that was my background. I interacted first with ApprendNet through a company that I had incubated called Hands Free Learning. And Hands Free Learning was building a platform to assess and teach hands-on skills. So example is a doctor is using the platform to learn how to do surgical knot tying. And the learning model, which was video and video-based response, was very similar to ApprendNet's learning model, focused more on soft skills, but still video and video-based response, sort of a role-play-based pedagogical model. And when I first met the ApprendNet team, literally within 5 minutes of the first conversation, it became clear that we had a very similar vision, we had very similar ideas about how to go about it, and that we would probably do better as one company.
Well, yeah, it sounds like you certainly had a lot in common. For those in my audience who've never heard about ApprendNet, how would you describe what ApprendNet does?
Yeah, we say we're building the broadest and most robust platform for the learn by doing space, as we describe it. So, you know, a lot of the technology that has been incorporated into teaching and learning has been focused on, you know, enabling the kind of disciplines that used to be taught with a textbook or a lecture, you know, focus on, you know, facts and learning, you know, interaction through threaded discussions, you know, is extremely valuable and obviously a lot of progression. We see sort of the less technology that has been used to enhance the things that you would never be able to learn from a textbook or a lecture, the kind of things you can only practice to be able to be good at. And those range from, you know, what are called soft skills or impact skills, like how to give stronger presentations or, you know, how a nurse could, you know, provide better interaction and feedback to a patient, and hard skills. You know, I mentioned the use case of surgical knot tying or suturing. But you know, the consistent tie is we're building a platform to enable the assessment and delivery of education for all of the skills where the right way to learn it is just practice.
Now, I know there are different parts to a given exercise. Can you describe a little more detail how that would work for the end user, being the instructor and then the student?
Yes, the fundamental experience is you know, video and then video based response. So in the example of soft skills, which is frankly the broader use on the platform currently, a learner would see what we call a prompt of a situation. Nursing is a good example to sort of understand. You might see a prompt of the type of interaction that a nurse who's working in the field might have with one of her peers, and then the student is asked to respond as if they were responding to that, you know, situation in real life and record themselves responding. One of the really cool things about that step in the process is, you know, through the data on the platform, we found that students record and re-record themselves about 3.1 times on average. And having a background in trying to build learning technology, it's, in my experience, extremely difficult to get learners to do over the bare minimum. So, you know, we're excited that we have a platform that just by its creation builds in sort of three times practice in its format. Once a learner is happy with their response, you know, it's uploaded to a system, and then generally they then are able to or asked to review the responses of their peers. So it's an opportunity for them to see how, you know, other learners perform the similar task. It's a great, you know, really great learning opportunity to sort of see how others took on the assignment, particularly when you're talking about assignments for which there's no one right answer. It's a sort of way of doing it. The learner is given a rubric designed by the instructor to provide feedback to the other learner that they're assessing. And then once they've assessed a certain number of peers, they're assessed by the instructor directly, and that's usually where, you know, the sort of the grade, you know, tends to come from. And then the sort of the end of the process is typically an instructor will assign an example of a best practice response. And again, one of the exciting things about the platform is, you know, in my experience and other learning management technologies, when a student, you know, is done with an assignment, they typically just want to see the grade and don't really spend as much time as we would like them to in the actual feedback on the grade. And one of the things about our platform that's really exciting is that 98% of students sort of sit through the whole explanation of how they did, you know, look at sort of all of the feedback that they've been given by peers and by their instructors. So it's another sort of exciting thing that the platform affects from a learning perspective.
We're using a PrintEd here. So in the interest of full disclosure, the University of the Sciences where I am, we're an early adopter of PrintEd. So I'm not getting paid, in case anybody's wondering out there. I'm just an enthusiastic user and supporter of a PrintEd. And I know we have pioneered it here in our occupational therapy and physical therapy departments, which tend to use video a lot to demonstrate different, you know, range of motion and different techniques that these therapists use with their patients, and it's been very enthusiastically supported by them. And I have a little bit of experience actually using it as an instructor. I teach a one-credit course in Survey of Online Tools where we cover PrintEd and some other technologies. Have you found that students adapt to this easily, especially now that, you know, with all the social media and all the, you know, the cell phone cameras and so on?
One of the cool things about PrintEd is the use of video as the underlying conduit of the instruction. You know, one of the challenges you have when you get to sort of next generation content or more interactive content is it tends to sometimes require, you know, programming HTML5 or proprietary simulation language, which can make the cost of development extremely expensive and isn't sort of as approachable from either a instructor or a learner perspective. You know, so people are at this point are so comfortable with both the consumption and the production of video. You know, everybody in their pocket at this point pretty much has what by historical standards would be considered a really high quality production studio. Almost everybody has viewed videos on YouTube. Almost everybody has recorded videos themselves. So the fact that we're using, even though it becomes a very, you know, good instructional design, it becomes a very engaged, highly interactive learning environment. The fact that we're using something so approachable as video does lower the barriers of acceptivity on both the instructor and student side. It is a pressure situation, to be frank, for a learner who is recording themselves. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. we do find that, you know, learners, as I mentioned, they record themselves 3.1 times on average. So they are, you know, they do take the fact that their peers are going to see them, you know, seriously. And, you know, we even hear, you know, from survey work that we've done that outside the system, you know, people practice in front of a mirror before they go into the platform. So there is mm-hmm. some level of focus that's created by the fact that learners know that they're going to be seen. But in terms of the being able to adapt to the technology and understand how to make, you know, videos and understand how the actual platform works, it's, you know, it's very fluid.
And I know from talking to our instructors here, the thing that they love about it is when they have a very large class, it's often hard to have the students connect with each other and for them to, frankly, grade a lot of videos. And so one feature that they like, I know in some of the classes that might have 60 or more students, that they use in the peer review stage, the students see their peers and then and rank them in one way of doing things. They can rank them. And so the faculty member gets a leaderboard, and so that they only have to go in there and look at the top 5 or top 10 videos and give, you know, more extensive feedback to those students. And then, of course, they put up their experts' response. So they, I think they really appreciate the sort of the labor-saving platform that you have for them.
Yeah, and we definitely hear that. For people teaching in disciplines where sort of role play and simulation has been part of the, you know, pedagogical model for a long time, it's people immediately get the value of the platform, which is just to be able to scale that better. I mean, you know, most instructors just, you know, there just isn't enough time, or, you know, simulation labs are so expensive and access to them is so limited that the ability to provide that type of experience, you know, to learners, but do it in a way where instructors, you know, don't have to, you know, it's sort of impossible to sort of find the time to sit down with every single student in a 60-person class. So doing, you know, enabling it in a scalable way is really important. We'd love to see more of that. I mean, one of the things that we're doing now is collecting data on the correlation between peer scores and trained faculty scores. And, you know, what we're hoping to find is that there's, after a certain number of peer instructors, you get a very good and stable assessment. And if, you know, the data demonstrates that to be the case in our case as well, it's a very exciting opportunity, because then you have really truly scalable interactive assessment. If you can provide a high quality rubric, turn it over to peers and let them assess, then as you mentioned, the instructor's job is then only the outliers, is only, you know, providing coaching to learners who are either struggling or get involved in cases where there isn't a high agreement around the peer assessors on how a learner performed, and makes the delivery of very interactive education very scalable.
You know, speaking of being scalable, when I talked to the two founders, Carl Okamoto and Emily Foote, back almost 3 years ago now, we talked about possible use as a MOOC, and I know a lot of institutions are experimenting with MOOCs these days. Have any of your clients been using it in sort of the MOOC format?
It's a great question. We'll have something to announce on that, we expect, in the next few weeks, actually. It's definitely an area that we would love to see, as you described, you know, sort of more advancement, because, you know, MOOCs are open access is phenomenally beneficial. Wouldn't it be even better if you could have open access with really engaging content? And, you know, we are expect to have something to say on that point in a couple of weeks.
You know, I first discovered ApprendNet at our local Distance Learning Association meeting, PADLA, it's the Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware Distance Learning Association, when Emily came to present. And our group is made up almost 50-50 in corporate and higher ed. So I was just curious, in terms of your clients, do you see, what do you see as the breakdown between corporate and higher ed?
At this point, it's mostly higher ed, but that's to some degree because that was the sole focus from the organization from its roots. You know, over the last 12 months, we've seen a significant acceleration on the corporate side and sort of more L&D offices at large corporations or organizations like hospitals using the platform. I mean, we're obviously very excited about that. I mean, I think one of the sort of general trends that we see in higher education broadly defined is just a closer connection between higher education institutions and employers and you know, sort of more kind of collaborative delivery programs like, you know, something like the ASU Starbucks type relationships, but just more in general, just more connection between ensuring what's being taught in higher education institutions are in line with what employers are expecting from a competency perspective, and then, you know, vice versa, employers sort of being more aware of laddering, of sort of building on learning that happened at the higher education institution. So we sit across both and expect to sit across both and have definitely seen an acceleration on the corporate side recently.
Yeah, we're certainly hearing more and more about competency-based education. This would seem to me to be a perfect tool to measure competencies. Can you give any examples? Do you know any particular universities that are profit or nonprofit that are using ApprendNet for that kind of assessment?
Yeah, I mean, so Kaplan has one of the very early approved pure competency-based learning colleges within the portfolio, and they extensively use ApprendNet. And while we're not, you know, sort of a competency-based virtual learning platform in the classic sense, you know, we're not a sort of LMS for all competency-based education, we have built the capability of ApprendNet working in a competency-based environment, you know, with the ability to tag assignments for their component competencies, the ability to have competencies span across multiple assignments. So if, a presentation skills is a broad competency that might not be just measured in one assignment, it might be measured across multiple assignments. You know, we built in the capability for that. And then in general, we're just, you know, sort of big believers, big proponents in the progression of education to involve, you know, competencies more, whether it's a pure play, you know, sort of CBE environment, or whether it's just sort of better focus and attention on course learning and course learning outcomes. We're big believers in that approach and have built the system to support that.
Speaking of that, sort of brings to mind sort of the integration with a learning management system. I know for those who are listening out there, ApprendNet does have, we do have single sign-on with our LMS, which is Blackboard. Do you see any further development in terms of being able to feed back into, say, a grade center from ApprendNet?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's, you know, currently, you know, LTI compliant, and we do have, you know, the basic single sign-on and you know, sort of that level of integration available and broadly used. We are building out the XAPI level of integration and sort of tin can compliance in our Q1 of next year release. And that's really exciting because, you know, sort of the historical integration has just been basically, can we get single sign-on and can we get grades to go back in a grade book? When you start to get into the underlying learning analytics, it's where, you know, really exciting things can happen, and you can start to take learner behavior and how they performed on videos and how much of the videos that they watched, like all of the underlying data that's collected in the system, and use that to more personalize instruction, use that as a feedback loop from an instructional design process. And so, yeah, we are very excited to support that. You know, it's still probably early for the market because not all of the LMSs sort of support that level of integration. But we'll hopefully be one of the organizations that's sort of pushing the industry forward in terms of further integration, because it's very exciting once you get down to the underlying data and what you can do with it if you're able to capture it and bring it back into a central system.
Is there anything else you're allowed to tell us about that in terms of new features?
Yeah, Q1 of next year we'll be, sort of rolling out the next version of the product. Sort of big elements are the full integration of the functionality that was in hands-free, which is the more focused capability on hands-on skills, which includes a voice recognition engine, so that, you know, one of the challenges when you're using video to teach somebody something where their hands are occupied, is you can't simultaneously have your hands occupied on, say, a surgical knot and also touch the screen and hit pause and rewind at the same time. So the technology includes a voice recognition engine, so you can speak to the screen and say things like pause and rewind and sort of the things you
might. Oh, that is cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It works pretty well because it's from a natural language problem perspective, it's an easier problem to crack than Siri, which has to understand
everything.
Right. We got to be very deep in there's only certain things you would say, so we can understand them fairly well. So, you know, that's one of the areas. And then really, you know, fundamental mobile support. PrenNet was, as we would expect for when it was built, sort of a web-first platform. You know, we're going to have native support for mobile. You know, our expectation is that there's just going to be, you know, broader use of tablets and phones. You know, those are great devices for consuming information. They're good devices for the input of video information. You know, they're not good for writing papers or sort of text-based information, but for the stuff that we're doing, they're great. And it also allows independence of place. You know, you can more in assignments can be, you know, in the real world and out in the field and sort of and not have to be bound by the constraints of having a laptop. And so, those are the two big areas that we're excited about.
Well, that is exciting. I know it fits very well with the field work that a lot of our students have to go through. And they've already been using iPads. Some of the programs here require students to have an iPad and they use it quite a bit in their labs and also in the field. So I expect to see a lot of additional exciting things from PrenNet. And I think that was a great way to sum up what it's all about. So I really want to thank you again for taking time to speak to us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been a fun discussion.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview. Stay tuned for the PodSafe Music Selection, the Vivaldi Concerto, Autumn Concerto, and also see the links that I have on my show notes for more information. Thank you, and until next time, have a great week. Thank you.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog or send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.